And good afternoon. Welcome to We the People. So if I take a really deep breath and talk really slow, Bill will be in his chair. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
We are
Billy and Patrick.
Yes, our special guests today.
Classic. Is it going to be like that? Are we going to be like that today?
I see it coming.
We're talking about dire topics, so, you know, of course. So let's see. Bob's calling our guests. So, well, is Bruce on there yet?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, so you might as well give them both a holler, and while we're doing that, we'll tell you a little bit about them. We've had both of them on before, and I neglected to put those links on the page for today. You can find everything about the show except for the previous shows with Claire and Bruce, because I haven't posted it yet, but you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. So it has our phone numbers, email addresses. We'd be happy to hear from you if you have ideas for sponsorship, other stations that might want to play the show, or, you know, ideas that you have on show topics or guests or things. So we do a lot of response to the folks that listen, and so we're happy to hear from you. So our guests today are chatting about, I don't know, I just put jihad hits the U.S. shores yet again, and I didn't have a better name for it, but both these guys are involved with national security. Bruce is a senior national security advisor who focuses on strategic planning for national security issues. He's a consultant that works with public officials, U.S. government committees, departments, agencies, think tanks, corporations, that sort of thing. And he is with Security Solutions Technologies, which is a veteran-owned company. We had Chuck Floyd on last week. He's the CEO of that company. Did a bang-up job on the scandal with the Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives, who have shall we say, trafficked with the Owen brothers, hired them for their IT consulting services,
show.
Which is just
great show.
Crazy. So, of course, we resorted to a tremendous amount of mocking, and so it was a pretty fun show last week, actually. I think you'll like it, and very informative, and hot topic, current.
Mm-hmm.
That's been brewing since February, so that is not done. Big investigation pending, and so if you're not aware of that one, I would suggest you listen to the archive from last week. And then Claire Lopez will be joining us, or maybe already has. And Claire is a strategic policy and intelligence expert with focus on national defense, Islam, Iran, counterterrorism. Currently a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and vice president of the Intelligence Summit. And she formerly was a career operations officer with the CIA, professor at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies. And she has a whiz-bang resume, which we have posted for you.
Whiz bang.
Can't go wrong with whiz bang.
Capital whiz.
Can't go wrong with whiz bang, huh?
No.
It's not enough. You know, I like to use the words that have kind of fallen into disuse. I feel sad for them that they're in the dustbin of history. So, all right, we have both these guys on here. We're not totally sure where they're taking us, but Bill and I are not experts on counterterrorism or anything like that.
So I've been terrorized, but I, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we'll be, we tried to go to the park downtown yesterday. Yeah. Wow. Things have deteriorated there. Anyway, we'll leave that for another day on local topics. But Bruce and Claire, where would you like to go, and who wants to go first?
Well, hello, this is Claire, and the first thing that I need to do is send you a new resume. I think you must have pulled an old one off of the Internet.
It's the same one I use every time.
I have actually now been senior... I was a senior fellow for the Center for Security Policy for 4 years, from 2010 till 2014. But since 2014, I am the vice president for research and analysis there at the center.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. And we had you just as kind of a flunky.
Well,
I don't know what senior fellows do, but it sounded good. But vice president's much better. please shoot me a current list, because it really kind of goes on from there. It's very... it's very comprehensive, so I'm sure some of those things are still true, but yes, hate
we'll put it on ZipRecruiter if you like.
ZipRecruiter.
No, I'm very happy where I am. I get to work with Frank Gaffney and the whole team at the Center for Security Policy. Couldn't be in a better place.
No kidding, and you guys are at the forefront of all this stuff that just keeps happening over and over and over. So I know you're only on with us the first hour, so I don't know how you guys have this divvied up, but I'm assuming you're doing the lion's share here the first hour, Claire.
And then,
well, I am waiting for your questions.
And then we have Bruce hostage the second half, so he's got a whole bunch of stuff for us the second half.
Sure, we can talk about the New York City Halloween terror attack, and then we can go from there. Because Sarah's, that's area that's been in the news, but it's not really been fully addressed in a way that Claire and I would look at it in a different manner. So, Claire, if you want to lead off, or I can lead off, you know,
I'm waiting for your questions.
Well, I was kind of curious on that Halloween deal. I guess they're saying he was a domestic recruit. Did he have actual contact with ISIS?
Well, what I would say, first of all, is there is no ISIS.
There you go.
ISIS stands for Islamic State in Iraq and al-Sham, and that name went away 3.5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
From June of 2014 until now, it has been the Islamic State. We could shorten it to IS if you'd like, but Islamic State. And no, we don't know of any contacts in a direct way between the shooter. I'm thinking of the church in Texas.
Right.
Between the Halloween.
The van driver.
Truck driver who rammed and killed all those people. Any direct contact between him and the Islamic State. We don't have that. Although the Islamic State posted something like he is a soldier of the Islamic State online. But, of course, they've taken credit for things they didn't do before, so hard to know.
Interesting. So what do you think the deal is with that? And why are
he's a jihadi. There's no question about that. He's a devout, practicing Muslim jihadi. His first name is Saif Alo, which is a form of Saif Allah, meaning the sword of Allah. So he obviously comes from a very devout, practicing Muslim family that would have named their son such a thing. And he kept the name into adulthood, came into the United States with it, so got to wonder who did that interview.
That was my next question.
Yelled Extreme Allahu vetting. Akbar when he got out of the vehicle after it had crashed into a school bus.
But so isn't it Jake Tapper who thinks that's a beautiful phrase there?
I would like to ask Jake Tapper when he and how did he study Islam?
Kidding.
Absolutely.
He needs to get out more.
So this...
Yeah, he's also from, Tampa, New Jersey, so there's a lot of work that needs to be done to find out who his contacts were, who he knew, to what degree he knew it, and... to do a little bit better background before they let people from Uzbekistan in, because that's just north there.
It does seem like this fellow bounced around quite a bit. He always seemed to be employed as a driver, a truck driver or commercial, truck driver or an Uber driver. He is supposed to have lived in states including Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Maryland, and was carrying a New Jersey driver's license. Now, the thing that they need to look at first is which mosques did he attend, because that's where you're going to find the locus of the jihad that he was part of.
Well, they already know where he attended, don't they? I mean, weren't they watching the mosques that he attended?
New York City police had a program that they call the Demographics Unit, which monitored area mosques extending into New Jersey, where his mosque is called Masjid Omar, or the Omar Mosque in Paterson, New Jersey. And that was one of the ones under monitoring by the NYPD until the likes of Linda Sarsour and Muslim Brotherhood figures pressured the NYPD into shutting down that program. And then the monitoring of that mosque and many others ended. I'll add something as well here. We also know that when he was in Ohio, previously, like about 5 years ago, 2012 is the time frame there, he was in Ohio, and there he attended a mosque called the Islamic Society of Akron and Kent, located in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. And we know for a fact from just looking at their online website that that's a Muslim Brotherhood mosque. The bylaws, for example, of that mosque are posted right at its own website. And in the bylaws, it says that in case of dissolution of the organization of the mosque, that the assets should go to ISNA or NAIT. ISNA, Islamic Society of North America, or NAIT, N-A-I-T, North American Islamic Trust. Both of them, unindicted co-conspirators named by the Justice Department in the Holy Land Foundation Hamas terror funding trial. Investigation is done. This guy is Brotherhood.
Absolutely. So what's the chances of him being tried as or handled as an enemy combatant? Is that even in the cards, or is he going to be tried like a regular U.S. citizen?
And which is better?
It looks like he's going to go through regular civilian court. I don't know why we put enemy combatants through a court system in any case. The United States court system is for Americans under American law, under the Constitution, and the laws derived from it. That's Article 6 of the Constitution. He is an enemy combatant. He should be sent immediately to Gitmo. No trial, nothing, just locked up until the cessation of hostilities in the current jihad war, and whenever that may come or not come.
So that's mostly forever.
Well, then he stays at Gitmo forever until the end of his natural life. But it does look like they're going to probably, for expediency's sake, try him in a U.S. civilian court.
Do you think this will instigate any change in the NYPD policy on these mosques? I mean, everybody knows what's going on there. I know the mayor doesn't want any bad relations, but this is out of hand. I mean, they've got to do something.
Well, one of the things I wanted to contribute here, and I think it's important, is once you put them through our system right away, then you don't continue on with an investigation of aiding and abetting.
Ew.
And that's what Claire and I are talking about, the different areas that he visited or had contacts before he actually, he surveilled New York City, Manhattan for 3 days before he went through for 17 blocks. It's not known generally that he took a drive for 17 blocks through people, and then he, jumped out, and then they shot him a couple times in the stomach. But my point is probably the same as Claire's. We got to find out where people are aiding and abetting. If he's been traveling these different places and getting information on how to exact a terrorist crime, then we got to, stop it at its source. And we have to take the trail backwards, not, have him in court right away and then prosecute him.
Right.
Yeah, that's my take on it. But
they're kind of acting like, they kind of act like these people just pop out of nowhere and there's only one of them. And when we come back, we have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'd like you guys to talk about the network that supports these folks.
Exactly.
Because that's really, I'm not even going to say downplayed, that's just ignored in the whole system. And that truly is the trick to stop some of this. So anyway, we'd like to hear your thoughts on that. You are listening to We the People. We will be back with Claire Lopez and Bruce Moran
in just a couple of minutes. We're going to do a little celebration of capitalism here. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Come on, people, now smile on your brother.
That's the program they've got going on in New York right now that's not working out so well.
I think they had the marathon today, so I hope they didn't have any incident. I mean, that was one of the big deals. They did cut out some of the programs from the marathon, but they did run the major part of the marathon. So,
They've had most of the drama appears to have been in San Antonio today. But okay, so talk to us from, I don't know if you guys both look at this the same way. I'm not sure, where you're area of focuses, but what about this networking
business, you know?
Well, it's very live and active. They work in the black market, the underground economy, and the formal sector. We operate in the formal sector, so they're very active. They know how to usurp and circumvent our system. And that's what Claire and I both talk about in different ways, but we do the same thing. I mean, we're trying to get a handle on what they're doing, and, you know, we were looking at his activities, and I would like to know myself what happened right before he came to the United States, who he's involved with, what he did, you know, what kind of action he was performing. You know, then he gets into the United States, and then he's all around the country, like Claire was saying. So there's something not normal there that, you know, its head is sticking up. And if we're allowing these kind of people in, what are they doing, where are they going, how are they doing it? That's what we want to know.
Well,
the network is the network of Muslims. We have to face this reality.
Right.
This individual, Saifullah Saipov is his full name, grew up, as we obviously can tell, in a devout Muslim family in Uzbekistan, where, by the way, the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan has long been a serious terrorism threat, both there in Central Asia and in other places where the fighters have gone, like Afghanistan. And then he comes to this country with a name like Sword of Allah. Did anyone ask him about that name? Did anyone ask him, what does that mean? Why do you keep it? What is its significance for you? Did anyone ask him that? Probably not, because they have no bloody clue. So the family is the first circle of influence for Muslims growing up. And then from there, they are probably going to go to madrasa, that is an Islamic school. They likely will be attending a mosque here or there or some other places. We know that this individual, Saipov, attended at least two. We know the names of at least two, the Masjid Omar in Paterson, New Jersey, and, of course, the Islamic Center of Akron and Kent in Ohio, probably attended mosques in other places where he lived. So the next place you look for influence is the mosque, the imam, the other members of the congregation. No Muslim lives alone. A Muslim is part of a community. It begins with a family. It expands into the mosque, the Islamic Center, family, friends, and so forth. In every one of these centers, there will be Islamic influence. The first thing the child learns is at his mother's knee. After that, in school. I can show you online at Amazon.com the textbooks in English that are used in American madrasas, U.S. Islamic schools all over the country. And they are taught, children are taught jihad and sharia from the first grade. This is not just some sort of osmosis procedure. Muslims are part of a community. They learn. They're not radicalized. That is crazy. There's no such thing as radicalization. They are raised in the faith. They are raised to be devout, practicing Muslims. For some it takes. For some it doesn't take. Same as with anybody. But in this Saipov's case, it obviously took.
And devout, practicing Muslim means getting rid of people who aren't devout practicing.
So how does that explain the moderate Muslims that don't believe in jihad and
that tell us that they don't believe?
Yeah,
that,
well, the jihad is part of all the teachings. You have the Sufis who
obligatory for every Muslim
to jihad in a spiritual way.
Jihad.
But then you have we call them certain Shi'i and Sunnis who practice it in a more of a war fashion. So, and if that's inbred in your teaching since you're a kid, and if you say you were with ISIS in Iraq and Syria, and you got a passport, because the ISIS had control of Iraq, a passport making, and you became a refugee, and your mother and you came to the United States or to Europe, then they are already here. We know they're here in every state, but I mean, they are here, and they're taught at a young age that people outside their community are apostates and infidels, meaning if you're a Muslim and you are not practicing what they're practicing, you're an apostate. If you're other thing than a Muslim, you're an infidel. So those two factors there separate them from the rest of the Muslim community. And they could be practicing with moderates or, you know, extremists or other, you know, people who just come, you know, occasionally to the mosque. But the important factor here is what Claire is saying is the jihad. Jihad is an accepted term. It has many meanings, but more so than we can say today, there are, you know, 1,000 or more terrorist activities happening a year in, around the world. And that's not because it's not, you know, a jihad. It is a jihad. And people aren't realizing that.
Well, there is actually only one definition of jihad in Islamic law, and I will quote directly from the book of law that is called the Umdat al-Salik, and that is, jihad is warfare against the non-Muslim. It is warfare to spread the religion. That is the definition of jihad under Islamic law.
It's pretty straightforward.
It is also the definition most common throughout the Quran. It is certainly the definition most common throughout the life of Muhammad in the Sirah, that is his biography, and understood by the scholars.
The practice, you say.
The mujtahid.
Yeah, it is the practice.
Historical time and currently. So there's really no such thing as a moderate Muslim. There are people who don't practice their faith faithfully. There are people who would be called lax or disobedient or fallen away. But the very word Muslim itself, the word itself in Arabic means one who submits to Allah and to Sharia. That is the definition of the word Muslim. So its own word carries its own definition. Either submit to Sharia, which demands and obligates every single Muslim to jihad, or not, in which case, you know, many people live their own lives, they get busy with jobs and families and children and all of that. Natural, normal, okay, fine, but you can't call them faithful or practicing.
So it's like a Christian. I'm a Christian, but the whole Jesus thing is really, I don't.
It's kind of a burden.
Yeah, it's kind of a burden.
Well, tell me this: if we know what they're teaching in the mosques, because we have a question in the chat room here, and she had asked, how do we know what's being taught in the mosques? We know then what's being taught in the schools to the kids because the books are available online in English, as you pointed out. So how do we know what they're teaching in the mosque? And let's say we absolutely knew because somebody, you know, from law enforcement went to the mosque and these guys are like, all right, we're going to, you know, take these guys out. They're making all these plans. Why is it, do we always have to wait until they do something?
I mean, this has been the way.
I mean, this is the balance.
Civilization, certainly across Western Europe.
Right.
And the New York Police Department, which was at one point in time the premier counterterrorism police force in this country, like I said, got taken down by the Brotherhood and basically kneecapped in its ability to monitor mosques and what goes on inside of them, to put confidential informants inside, to have people reporting out from inside what is taught, what is the literature, what are the DVDs available, that sort of thing. But I will point out the example of France, which is, as we all know, under all-out assault by the forces of the Islamic movement, and so many horrific attacks having taken place across France in the last couple of years. But just recently, a new counterterrorism law went into effect in France, and that law empowers local law enforcement authorities to enter mosques, to penetrate mosques, to monitor mosques, and even to close down mosques that they find to be a terrorist jihad threat. So do we have to wait for a Nice, France, a Bataclan, a priest beheaded at the altar? I hope not. But
so we can't, currently under our laws, we cannot infiltrate or close down a mosque if we know that terrorist activity is being planned there. We have to just wait for them to come out with gun in hand.
There are restraints on local law enforcement, including now the NYPD, about monitoring. I mean, to find anything out, you've got to monitor in the first place. And because their ability to monitor has been taken away They're not able to find out what's going on inside, and only by luck, a whistleblower, some informant, somebody gives them a tip, something may tip them off about something being planned, but they cannot proactively monitor the places where we know. I mean, mosques are not Muslim churches. They are command and control centers for jihad.
Exactly.
Why? Because that's how Muhammad established them. That is what they have been from the beginning. The first mosque, of course, established in Medina after the Hijra in 622 from Mecca. So until that authority is returned back to local law enforcement to be able aggressively and proactively to monitor what's going on, not just the spoken sermon or the khutbah on Friday prayers, but the literature that is in the Associated Bookstore, the DVDs, or even what people are talking about. Unless they're able to do that, we're going to find ourselves in the position of Western Europe and France.
Would now that they have this this guy in custody, they know what mosque he attended, is that not enough to start surveillance on them, or they need more than that now?
Need a higher body count?
One would hope, but we don't know. I don't know where law enforcement is going on the Saipov investigation. One would hope that they're investigating the mosques where he attended, but who knows? Maybe they're too afraid of being called an Islamophobe or a bigot or a racist.
Well, those guys, when they capture these guys, are they forthcoming with information, or are they pretty tight-lipped? They don't they stick to their guns?
Well, we know in the case of Saipov that he was talking in his hospital room. He was shot, but is going to survive. It's not life-threatening, and he was able to talk. And not only did he ask for an Islamic State flag, which, by the way, is simply the black flag of Islam. That's all it is, the black flag of jihad. But he apparently was talking to the law enforcement that he was proud of what he had done. Well, of course he's proud.
Right.
He's a jihadi. He did what he was commanded to do. But other than that, we don't know where the investigation has gone or if it has moved to look at the mosques he attended.
God, if that doesn't make him an enemy combatant, I don't know what does.
I'm kind of curious. We have to take a quick break again, but I'm kind of curious when we come back, is it better that they die or is it better that they live? And I realize that's sort of a bad and mean-spirited question, but I guess as far as solving the problem, is it better that we put him in prison or is it better that we just eradicate them as we go? And I'd be curious you guys' thoughts on that when we come back. So, you're listening to We the People Radio, kind of a big topic today. Hope you're enjoying it. You can find everything you need to find about the show and archives and stuff at wethepeopleradio.us.
My mother, there's too many of you to cry. Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, sister, oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Side in the shotgun sings the song. I tip my hat to the new constitution. Take a bow for
song just took on a whole different meaning. All right, so Claire or Bruce, whoever has thoughts on this, is it better if they live? I didn't even forget during the break, actually, my question, which I typically do, and I, like, launch off on something else.
So you're referring to martyrism.
But I seriously want to know, is it better for us? Not better for them, obviously, or their families and stuff. But
I mean, incarceration cost us $32,000, $28,000 a year. But the most important thing about keeping them alive is to find out who they were with, what they did, you know, how what their habits are. That is tells you a world of difference about getting information and extracting it from them.
Is it?
I think the living part for an act like this is yes. For criminal activity, that's a mass killer. No, you know, they're two different, separate, and distinct things. Terrorism has a whole different tinge to it, especially if it's jihad. Because like I was saying earlier, jihad and terrorism around the world, there's over 1,000 incidents a year. People aren't realizing that. And it hasn't come home to roost here in a way where people are. I think there's so much violence going on and so much activity where you're seeing a lot of protests that people are not really taking to account what Claire says. I understood this years ago, and Claire understood it from the get-go because she was in the field. But people who don't know what we know don't understand that keeping somebody alive is a better way to find out what's going on and how you're going to get some information from them. I'll defer to Claire now. So,
no, I absolutely agree with that. In cases like these, what you always want to do is to interrogate the attacker. And
I didn't use those words, Claire.
Find out.
I know, but that's what we actually have to do. And there's a lot of pushback on interrogating people, and that's why they want to put them put them in jail in the United States, so they don't interrogate them. And that's what ticks me off personally.
So
because I know they need to be fully interrogated in a lot of different ways. So.
Sure, but okay. So Claire, with your background. Okay, so let's say we get to quasi-interrogate them, because I know that's very unpopular. But their platform that they would get in a U.S. court, not a Guantanamo situation, but in regular court, the platform that they have at that point to spread their message or whatever you want to call it, the notoriety that they get, does that hurt us?
That helps them do what they need to do to hide. You put them in Gitmo.
Hold on,
they're there. Oh, let me talk for like 30 seconds.
Okay.
They're there by themselves, isolated, and they got to think about that. And then they start talking, and then you start the interrogation process, and then they start talking a little bit more. Then you increase your interrogation methods. So the idea of them being in a general public in a jail, in American prison, where they can socialize or, you know, they have three squares that way, is different than Gitmo. That's what I'm trying to convey.
Sure.
Now, Claire, it's off to you.
Well, no, I was just saying that the actual trial process is not something that really is going to boost their status much more than it already is. You know, it depends on what kind of statements they're permitted to make that are quoted in public, of course. But honestly, what we've seen with jihadis captured and brought to trial, not just here in the United States, but elsewhere, Canada and Western Europe and other places, is that when these individuals actually are allowed to speak, they tend to speak truth. And that's not a bad thing. They speak truth. I fought for Allah. I did this for Allah. I am fighting fi sabil Allah. I am a jihadi in the way of Allah. If that's repeated often enough, maybe, just maybe, it'll begin to sink in.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a good idea. That's an interesting
But just saying
look at
that,
it.
I mean, that makes them a combatant. Why doesn't that, you know, make a mistrial and send them to Gitmo right then? I mean, that's end of the story.
I concur. I agree with the president, too, on his immediate assessment. We just have a whole system of people who are pushing back against us and understanding, you know, there's a different way for them to handle would kid gloves, this kind of murderous, treacherous, I'm going to say fanatic, homicidal activity. You know, and that's really bad. And my own group, we call it homicidal fanatics and Islamic jihadists. And I'm going to, you know, be very truthful here. They are homicidal, they're fanatics, and they don't care. You can see what happened in New York. You see what happened in Orlando, San Bernardino. That's the way it goes down, but nobody's taking it as on face. You know, that's the way it is. But, you know, we don't want that to happen. Claire understands the fact, bottom line, I do, but it's not the way it's being reported in the news, and they soften everything up.
So the Center for Security Policy, Claire, do you guys have the ability, I mean, who do you work with primarily? Do you work with law enforcement, government? I know you guys do all sorts of different things, but...
Well, when requested, for example, we will provide briefings to members of Congress. I participate, along with John Guandolo, at Understanding the Threat and his team, in training and teaching law enforcement across the country. We've been doing that for a couple of years. So we do a lot of that, plus, of course, different kinds of broadcasting, TV, radio. Thank you very much for the platform.
Always.
We do a lot of writing, reporting and issuing of papers and reports and that sort of thing. So it's across a whole spectrum of educational activities. As a 501c3, that's our primary responsibility, is education, and we do that in all of those ways.
Are we getting somewhere with that? Do you feel, I mean, we've got like...
Not at the federal level. At the federal level, the war is lost already. The federal level is in the hands of the enemy, and I really mean that. But at the local level, and that is, of course, where an insurgency actually is fought and won or lost, at the local level, we think that we have a better chance of fighting back. The problem is that the bad guys, the Islamic movement, has a long head start. They came to this country. The Muslim Brotherhood came to this country shortly after World War II. That's how long they've been at it. We are only beginning to glom on, but I will say that at the local level, when we do talk to sheriff's deputies, police departments, and just local civilian patriotic groups and individuals, they get it. And I've seen a real learning curve take place at the local level over the last, I'd say, 5 to 6 years that I've been, you know, speaking around the country. So we're encouraged at the local level, but, boy, have we got a long way to go.
When you say the federal level, are we talking about all of the law enforcement? We're talking,
yes.
You know, FBI,
I mean,
and all these guys?
I mean, the Department of Defense.
We need
the Department
of Justice, we need to
the Department
have,
of Homeland Security.
The
I mean,
Senate
the intelligence community,
approve
I mean,
people
the White
at
House,
mid-level
I mean, the National
to start
Security
executing
Council.
And enforcing what we know
Hold on, Bruce.
The Muslim
needs to be done.
Okay, wait. Claire, say that one more time, because you guys are both on the...
Sorry, there.
Okay.
What I was saying is that at the federal level, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, the Department of State, the intelligence community, the White House and the National Security Council have all been suborned and are not working to counter the Muslim Brotherhood enemy. We know for a fact that inside of the FBI there is not one single individual, not one single unit that is dedicated to going after the Muslim Brotherhood as a subversive enemy of the United States of America.
So you
not
say
one.
Suborned. What do you mean by
that?
For
what reason? I mean, how?
That is how influence operations work. That's how it works. They got inside a long time ago. The Brotherhood got inside. The Islamic movement got inside a long time ago. They provided briefings. They said, we will teach you about Islam. We'll tell you what it is. Those guys, those awful Al-Qaeda guys and Islamic State guys and Taliban, you know, they're extremists. They're you know, that's not us. We'll explain to you.
Yeah.
And so they had the inside track.
Oh, so they got a seat at the table, basically.
Which is deceit and dissimulation. And to spread an untrue understanding of Islam within the federal bureaucracy, the federal government. And so what happened during the years, especially of 2011 till 2012, although it began much earlier, is what we call the Great Purge. And literally, PowerPoints, presentations, syllabuses, you name it, and the instructors that went with them, if they taught accurate truth about Islam and the role of Islamic doctrine as inspiration for Islamic terrorism, it was removed from the federal government, and the very words jihad, sharia, caliphate were removed from the lexicon. I mean physically removed.
Oh, yeah.
No one in the federal government is allowed to speak or use or train these words and this understanding since that time.
And
that is what I call suborned.
Well, we also had a military purge.
These government agencies,
and that happened with about 170 generals and admirals who were, I would consider, patriotic, who were trying to keep certain of the idea in place to be, you know, a patriot and follow and protect the country, but they were removed also. So those are 175 generals and admirals. So it happened, the purge was happening in so many different sectors, you know. Claire, it's all, you got the table.
Claire, where does Jeff Sessions stand on this? Does he have any ability to, you know, move forward and get rid of these people that are influencing on the federal side to not go after this?
Oh, he has a lot of ability, plenty of authority. Where he stands, I just don't know. I can't tell you. We don't see any evidence at the federal level, Department of Justice, or any other place since the Trump administration took office this past January of a commitment to countering the jihad, to going after the Muslim Brotherhood, to identify the Islamic movement and to formulate and execute an effective policy to defeat it. None. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some of it's happening on a smaller scale, but we're not getting our appointments in at the mid-level at DHS and all the different departments and agencies.
So we're left with all the Obama guys.
Yeah, of course. So there's pushback. I don't want to go into detail what I know, but I'll talk about what Claire's talking about, and she's absolutely right. I mean, there are people there. There are not many of them, but they're, you know, underground because they can't really come forward and enforce the law like they know they need to do. And if they step forward, then they get squashed, you know, and that's a shame. You know, they've tended to, like Claire was saying, change the whole dynamics of how law enforcement's been educated, what they can say, what they cannot say. So you don't even have freedom of speech. And if you say something wrong, then they call you on the rug and you can get demoted. So even if you look at Gregory Hicks, you know, we were looking at Benghazi when we were working on that. He got sidelined and he testified, but that was the end of him. So even people want that step forward and say things about what they think is true and what they believe. He's the second in command in Tripoli, by the way. Then you just get squashed. And that's how big the bureaucracy is. And if they can, you know, sideline and eliminate, say, 170 or more, 75 generals and admirals, there was a big purge going on and at the CIA and the National Security Council and at the FBI and all the different things. If you just got to be on board and you follow it and you get your pay and you get your promotions, and that's what they do. There's no understanding of patriotism, you know, going out there and doing your job and enforcing it to protect all citizens. Citizens aren't being protected to the full extent of the law. There's no enforcement. I'll turn it over to Claire. So.
What about
I'm saying too many strong things because we're dealing with this stuff right now. So.
Yeah, what about our Secretary of State? I mean, isn't that where it kind of all starts?
Well, the Secretary of State certainly has a very responsible position within the cabinet, within the president's administration and team. Unfortunately, what we're seeing from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is a failure to understand the Islamic movement, to understand the jihad that we are facing, not just at home, but rather internationally as well. A failure as well to understand at a strategic level what's going on in the Middle East, for example, which is more his portfolio at the State Department, international affairs rather than domestic ones. And there we see that there's very little understanding at the State Department of For example, the expanding influence, aggressively expanding geostrategic influence of Iran and the Shiite Crescent. The land bridge that's been built across from Tehran through the Middle East, cutting across to find its outlet in Lebanon on the Mediterranean. Just today we find out that the Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, of Lebanon has resigned and fetched up in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, to make the announcement because otherwise he was afraid he was going to be killed back home in Lebanon. Nobody's paying attention to the expansion of Iran. It's encirclement action around the Arabian Peninsula. Think how this goes. Mentally, think of a map. Beirut, Lebanon, on up to Baghdad, to Baghdad, Iraq, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Iranian Shiite the Shiite regime. Damascus, of course, is a Tehran puppet. And now all the way around to Yemen, where Houthi rebels are receiving assistance from the Iranians, and a missile, a ballistic missile, was just intercepted, luckily, over Riyadh, the capital, and pieces of that missile fell apart, broken, onto the international airport in Riyadh. This is what's going on in the Middle East, and I don't see any indication that Secretary of State Tillerson understands that at all.
Wow,
Never mind. One last point, the strategic waterways that are being incorporated under Iranian, at least threat, if not control. First of all, Strait of Hormuz, of course, at the mouth of the Persian Gulf, and then, of course, the Bab el-Mandeb, which is the narrow strait that runs between Yemen and the Horn of Africa. Extremely important waterway right there with access to the Red Sea and on up to the Suez Canal.
Holy cow.
These things are coming under threat by Iran and a Shiite crescent surrounding the Arabian Peninsula. I never, ever heard Secretary of State Rex Tillerson say a word of what I just told you.
Wow. I'd love to talk more about that. We got a hard break coming up. Claire, thank you.
If you can stay with us, Claire, we'd appreciate it. If you can't, we totally understand. Thanks for being there. And Bruce Moran is sticking with us the second hour for sure. He's our hostage. Claire's an optional hostage.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being with you.
I gave the floor to Claire.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Claire, for standing up and being counted. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. All right, we'll continue on. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. And if you're joining us late because maybe you got your time screwed up or maybe you just had other stuff to do, which I don't understand, but if anything,
you'd be joining us early.
What's up with that? But see, anybody, you know, you always use the time thing as an excuse. It really doesn't matter if it went forward or
Elizabeth
back.
Elizabeth was our resident expert on that.
Oh, yes.
Elizabeth, you coming in? I'm here drinking coffee.
Yeah, you're supposed to be here.
Phil's got his headphones on backwards again.
Yeah.
I love it when he has his headphones on backwards. That's when I'm sad there's no video. You look a little
sad. That and his baseball cap on backwards at the same time.
Yeah, that would actually be... No, I think it's still backwards.
No, they're not. Who cares? What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah. There you go.
There you are.
Yeah, throw down, Bill.
That's right. I had to go all the way with that.
So we're back with our guest, Bruce Moran. If you missed the first half, well, we're sad for you, but you can catch that on the archive. So, Bruce, this time it's all you this hour. And we got a ton of stuff. You sent me a whole bunch of stuff while we were driving into the radio station.
Sure. I'd like to cover that in the last half hour.
We can't cover that in a half hour. Are you insane?
No, we're going to cover it. Hey, before we go there, maybe we could touch on this missile.
I have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead. Forget the missile.
I'll talk to you Chicago style. Give me some time, you know?
Yeah, we heard your sirens earlier. We knew you were still in Chicago.
No, you could tell. So what Claire said, you know, is formidable and germane. I like to give President Trump credit, you know, for handling all this and all the pushback. He's doing a tremendous job. ISIS is no longer a state, a caliphate state in Iraq and Syria. Raqqa fell 3 weeks ago. That's tremendous. I mean, you got to say what's good, you know.
Sure.
What he's doing to handle the nuclear crisis in
North Korea, great job. Talking to the minister of Japan, the prime minister, they're out golfing today, and they're making sure that they're getting all the, you know, T's crossed and I's dotted. You know, those are the kind of things you need to do. You do the face-to-face. Melania's there. She's talking, you know, about the other side of the equation, the cultural side, helping, you know, ferment those relationships that are needed. They're doing a wonderful job. In terms of the Middle East also, it's just not what happened, like I said, in to eliminate the Islamic State, but now we're seeing a turnaround of what, how independent the Iraq government can be. Do they want to be independent, or do they want to be part and parcel to, you know, the influence of Iran? There's where Claire, you know, was talking about. And what's going on? You see there's a pushback in northern Iraq against the Kurds, and there's infighting going on. People don't know about that. And that's up in the Nivea Plain region. And why would that happen? Well, the Kurds want their independence. They want their own, you know, state. And they voted on it, and it's not in the Iraq Constitution. So there's a lot of pushback coming from many ways. The international community, including the United States, didn't want that vote. But, well, part of the vote would have been without the people who were from the region, because they're displaced people and they're refugees. They're in Lebanon, they're in Turkey, and they're in Jordan. And you got hundreds of thousands of people that need to be taken care of, and they're displaced, and they're not being fully represented. So their individual rights as indigenous people are not being identified, and the Iraqi government knows that. And that's what's happening there on that end. So there's a fight going on, which Claire is fully abreast of, with the Iranians trying to largely influence the Baghdad government. And then you have the other fight going on, which al-Abadi, who is the prime minister of Iraq, is handling in the northern part of Iraq in the Nivea Plain. And what's important about the Nivea Plain? Well, that's a third of the oil for Iraq. They've been without a third of their oil since ISIS took over. So you're looking at 2014, and when Mosul fell, and then their economy was just running on fumes, and they were fighting a major battle. So they recruited, and the United States came in to help with the bombings earlier, but then the United States came in later with President Trump and took care of business with the Russians on the other side. So you had this whole different idea with President Trump inculcated into, you know, make America great, make America strong, make America protected. That was in foreign policy also. So that's the beginning of what I wanted to say at this segment. So
what about this Saudi Arabia business going on today?
Now they have ballistic missile.
Yeah, now I mean, that came from Yemen, and isn't Yemen kind of sponsored by Iran as well?
Both sides. That's the fight going on the ground.
Right.
My question would be, okay, for the United States to protect its borders, we have al-Qaeda influence over there, we have ISIS, and then we have heavy drug trafficking going on there from Afghanistan with the warlords, and that's why it keeps them going. There's a larger percent of the Iranians on that east border that are drug addicts as well as in Afghanistan. So we have – that wasn't mentioned, you know. And hang on for a second.
Oh, sure, no problem.
what? Hang on for a second.
Wait a minute.
That's like something my mom does.
I'm hovering over Saudi Arabia right now.
My mom's like, oh, hold on. Hello? The neighbor. Yeah. Oh, yeah, hello.
Yeah, oh, there you are. Yeah, we were just
stalling
on
for
here.
Time.
Okay. So what I was conveying is there's a larger contingent of understandings of what's going on in Afghanistan itself. And maybe this Safaro was part of that movement earlier. What I wanted to convey also was the importance that as a young jihadi in a family that's practicing the Islamic faith, the young jihadis are taught to kill at a young age. And that's what the mothers are helping them understand and inculcate into their teachings, their practices, and their doctrine. And that's what Claire is saying, but I'm saying it in a different way. What happens is, like I'm saying in Raqqa, if the ICs had control of the passports, and we knew at least 3,000 ICs fighters had gone back, this is 3 or 4 years ago, back into Europe, that saying Europe is done. Europe has a huge problem. This was 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well,
sure.
They've opened the gates and let everybody come in.
If that's why France is, you know, exacting more draconian laws to go in and find out what's going on in Mosque or trying to stop the activity because one of those bombers and attackers was from Tunisia, you have a whole slew of different areas of enforcement that need to be covered. They were so lax for so many years that they've been infiltrated, and now that we can use the word exfiltrated, the people that were in Iraq and Syria that were ISIS fighters, they exfiltrate into the countries that they're from. How many, do you remember this? How many people came in from different countries to fight in Iraq and Syria to form the Caliphate State? Remember that number?
No.
Can't imagine.
It was over 100. Well, let's say 100. So if they came in from 100 countries and they go back to 100 countries, what does that mean?
That means we got a problem. Because they're
everywhere. We got a huge problem.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
I was talking about earlier on the show, if there are at least maybe 1,000 bombings annually around the world, what does that say? From terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. That's a huge problem.
That is a giant problem.
And nobody's addressing that.
No. And that's why I don't, I just don't understand why when these guys pop up and run a bunch of people over or shoot a bunch of people, that they aren't just shipped off to Gitmo. And end of story. I mean, we don't, why are we wasting our time going through these motions when we know and law enforcement knows and the federal government knows what these people are doing?
Because we have people in our country who kneel for the national anthem.
Well, the other thing is that they want the federal system to work to prosecute them. But I'm going back to what Claire says, they're enemy combatant. They never assimilated, and
that's
they
right.
never will.
Nope.
And they're only here to carry out the action at a time when it's ready for them to do the jihad and murder people.
That's right. And trying them in our courts is just giving them one more stage, one more platform to spread their belief and to get their movement moving forward. They need to just disappear, and we need to move on to the next one and eradicate them. And speaking of that...
That is true. You have to understand there's tens of billions of dollars that are funding the jihad. You have to understand it. What I'm trying to convey here is, when I was talking earlier, maybe my point wasn't clear enough, but we have three areas. It's the informal sector, the underground economy, and the black market. And those three areas where all this activity transpires. It's tens of billions of dollars are traveling that we don't know where it's going, how it's getting there. We work in the formal sector, so what we think we're doing is a good job. And from my perspective, we're not. We don't have, they can go black on us. And what does that mean? They can go dark, and we don't know what they're doing, how they're doing it, unless we start working in those circles. We need more covert operators, more people in the CIA, just not drones flying around looking at, oh, we found somebody, and then we, oh, let's go get them, and then you get some collateral damage, and everybody's hollering and screaming, you can't do drones anymore. So you got, there's a lot of problems here that need to be resolved with how we're executing our strategic and tactical operations and what we want to do to make sure they're properly taken care of in foreign policy and domestic policy.
But
And we're talking about domestic policy. I'm talking now, huh? I let Claire have
Yeah, shut up, Bill. Oh, wait, we have to...
So what I'm talking
nice
about
Nice job,
here
Bruce.
Is,
can I talk?
Can I talk?
Know,
Chuck and I have been working in the federal government sector for together 13 years now. 15 years going back to when he's running embassy operations around the world. So, you know, there's a lot of history here of what we know the government is doing and is not doing and what President Trump is doing really effectively. But then there's all that pushback, and can you imagine what he could do if there wasn't pushback?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, it's huge. And that's why you see all these things happening. And President Trump will tweet, well, it's bad to kneel. Well, it's unpatriotic. Well,
It's disrespecting the flag. Well, it's not understanding that people died for you to kneel. I mean, if you want to kneel, kneel on your own time outside the stadium. The stadium is a free zone. It's supposed to be not political. You're making it political. So is that saying the referees can kneel for their cause and the cheerleaders and the pom-pommers can kneel for their cause and all the guys, you know, and gals selling food, they're not happy what they're doing so they can kneel for their cause and disrupt the national anthem?
Yeah, that's...
See what I mean?
That's not good.
If
we
can give the players the right to do this, then the referees have the right to do this. Then the cheerleaders have a right to do this. Then some people in the stands that think one way, they can do it their way. People in the other part of the stands can do it their way. And people in another part of the stands can do it their way. They kneel when they want to kneel for their cause.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a football game where everybody's just coming to enjoy the game. It's going to be everybody, you know, promoting their, you know,
social. It's also not going to be a country.
You know, what they think is their wrongs to them as people. This is entirely upside down, backwards, and, you know, crazy to me.
All right, we got
to
take a
break.
Well,
we're gonna solve that with capitalism.
Yeah.
And we'll take a break and honor capitalism. And meanwhile, if you don't spend money on the NFL, then they honestly can't do that because...
When we come back, lay off the pom-pommers. I don't want to hear that again.
The pom-pommers. I like that. I thought that was funny. We'll be right back with our guest, Bruce Moran. We're chatting about national security today on We the People.
So many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
For the Bruce versus Bill show.
Pet cockroaches? Because I have one, and it sometimes gets unruly. And I take it down the hall, you know, and there's dogs here, and it snares at the dogs. It scares the dogs.
Did you call it a cockroach?
Covert operations, you know. So, you know, it's got its kung fu together and all this stuff. But, you know, sometimes it gets out of hand.
Exactly.
So can I come to Reading, you know, fly there? Fly into, you know, Sacramento.
You know what? When you fly into Reading, the baggage thing, you know, how normally you've got to look through all the bags to make sure yours doesn't go by. There's only like four, and then it goes back inside the wall.
Yeah.
Like,
and the lady that takes them off the plane is the one that checks in the security thing when you get inside the terminal.
And sells you the ticket.
And she makes the call.
I won't even put my cockroaches in the baggage. I'll just come on, just carry on.
Yeah, I would.
Keep them in my pocket.
I would.
There you go. Hey, Bruce, I got a question, and it's kind of off topic a little bit, but not really.
What?
Shooting in Las Vegas, this thing went dark. Was there a IS connection there, or was that all?
I don't want to go there. There's a lot of
shut
areas
you down, Bill.
We can talk about, and let's stay away from that one. I think you found out that
that's
his
yes.
disk was missing. That's a,
you know, found out what was missing?
His computer disk.
Yeah, there's
Did
a
we
whole
find
lot
that
of
out?
There's a lot of fishy stuff going on there, and I didn't know if
yeah,
that was.
Yeah, you just you know, we're trying to concentrate you know on other things and.
Do we get to do that next
Las
time?
Las Vegas thing. There's a lot of interplay. You know, there's you know the Miramar and you know all that you know the way they the security's been working there. You know, they have some of the top security in the country.
Yeah,
Navy SEAL Team 6, I understand, went there and helped secure. No, the Mandalay. So, I mean, if somebody got through them, it means somebody got through. And they're saying he came in through the elevator. Well, what's going on?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the freight elevator. I'm sorry.
Do we get to talk about that
I
later?
I don't know. I don't want to. There's too much to talk about there, and I wanted to cover the other material.
All right, we'll cover that thing. You're going to come back, then we're going to talk about that. Okay, so where do you want to go from here?
Do you like the boss of Bruce?
Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
okay.
It's my show.
Right on.
Yeah.
He didn't even want to be a co-host. What the hell?
Oh, no, I'm
Did I say
over.
Hell?
Rob
too late.
To be a referee for NFL.
Yeah, he was getting his coffee not too many years ago.
Down and get myself counted and being on national news.
I thought you were going to be a pom-pommer.
Everybody about my being roughed up by the players on the field. They're hollering at me. You know, all that kind of stuff.
That's right. You could file a union
being
grievance.
Being a referee isn't a nice job. You know, you take it. It's a job, you know. And I need more pay. I think they could pay maybe $150. So I think it's worth at least... these guys are making, you know, $5, $6, $7 million a year. Why can't they pay a referee, you know, $250,000 to take all that kind of grief from these guys on the field?
Yeah,
they
no
holler
kidding.
That.
Yeah, you don't see the referees taking any.
You know?
They don't
so
make
this,
that
this
much
is
money.
Bad. I mean, they got their right too on the field.
Nope, you're right.
Well, who knew? I hadn't thought about that.
I mean, tell the players, you know, to cool it, you know.
We did.
So,
we
what I really wanted
years
to talk
ago.
About
yes.
was
back to that
the getting back to the CFIUS and what we've seen happening with uranium. We call it CBRs, chemical, biological, radiological. You know, we don't want to see any of those attacks upon our shores. And President Trump has been doing a tremendous job. But again, like Chuck and I have been conveying, the mid-level people have to be put in there to enforce this and to get that border wall up. But I want to get back to this. It's the uranium that was evidently shipped out in yellow cake. And that yellow cake can be used to what? Used for nuclear reactors, but it can also be used for nuclear weapons. So what's the score there? I mean, what was going on back in that time when you're taking yellow cake and, you know, shipping it out of the United States, you know, so.
Well,
what are your thoughts on it?
Well, that went out. The story I heard was that, you know, they said, it was against the law to ship it to Europe, but didn't they go out through Canada and then some trucking company took it to Canada and then it went out from Canada to Europe? Did they confirm that?
Did you know who the company was? I mean, are you familiar with the company that they had the agreement with?
No.
To enlighten.
It was the Russian nuclear agency. I mean, come on now.
Oh, my God, we should have figured that out. Sorry, that was an easy one.
Yeah.
Always blame Recitom. The Russians. Darn it.
Yeah.
It's called Recitom.
Recitom? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
What the heck?
It's the Russian Nuclear Energy Agency. What in the heck are we doing giving yellow cake to the Russians? Now, I understand, but isn't there a process to go through in the House and the Senate? It's called the USTR. Isn't there, beside the CFIUS process, who's responsible for the trade going on? The Senate approves the trade. And what is it part of the trade that it's okay to trade uranium to the Russians? I don't know who was on top of this and who had oversight in the House and Senate at that time. It's 2010. So if we go back and take a look at that, you know, if you look at the CFIUS process itself, it was Timothy Geithner. I said, wow, you know, what was he doing and who was he talking to about approving this and what were they approving at the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then who was the chairwoman of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works? Barbara Boxer.
Ugh, the dumbest member of the Senate? We put her in charge of something?
Well, who handles the yellow cake. That's what.
Perfect.
That's that part of that, Senate that has oversight for it. And we know that Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State Department in 2010.
Well, and wasn't Mueller the FBI head of FBI at that time?
Yeah, we can say that.
Yeah, and now he's investigating the whole thing. It kind of makes him look bad. I think it's kind of circling around to a place where he doesn't.
How do you cover your own? How do you cover yourself? Well, you're in charge of the investigation, and you just can't see yourself. Huh.
Okay, who was head of the Department of Energy?
Hold on, it's on your list. Oh, Stephen Chu, Dr. Stephen Chu.
Yeah, and here's a guy that's a Nobel Prize guy and a physicist, and he doesn't understand that yellow cake going to the Russians. Who did he talk to about? Who did Timothy Geithner talk to? Did he talk to the head of the, you know, USTR? And was there a consensus, a collaborative consensus and approval to have that done?
Well, now,
this is beyond the question of responsibility in the national security realm. What are people doing?
And then why are we
talking to who? And why was this done in the fashion it was done?
Well, and then let's not leave out your last two actors on the list.
lest we forget, John Kerry, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Yeah, and then idiot Carl Levin, chairman of Armed Services.
But John Kerry took over Hillary Clinton's spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he became Secretary of State.
Him and James Taylor.
That's pretty casual, yeah. You got a friend.
Why would Russia want to buy yellow cake from us when they can make their own? I mean, they've got nuclear reactors over there that produce the same product. Why would they go through all these motions to buy it from us?
That's the question we need to ask Timothy Geithner, Barbara Boxer, Hillary Clinton, Stephen Chu, John Kerry, and Carl Levin. Why did you want to sell to them in the first place?
Yeah.
It's a nuclear, it's once it's enriched, it can help with, like I was saying, the nuclear reactors and the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see a weapon that was shot, from Iran, and they have ballistic missiles. Are they going to be able to weaponize them? One of the things we need to take into account, too, is what Claire was talking about, and I have a very big concern here, is about Iran. Even though the Russians are there, and if you read what I wrote there, they're there watching and guiding. But we don't know, for the life of us, who is doing what to make these ballistic missiles, nuclear. And we may have the Russians there, but the Russians may not be able to be allowed to go into the other sites that the military hold and are doing these tests. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing for Saddam Hussein. We went in there and we did a review, but there was a lot of stuff you can call bleach bit in all the computers. And then lots of money and chemicals and stuff disappeared. We thought they might have went into Syria and then, up there, and he developed some of his chemical weapons from that. But that's another story. So what we're talking about here is the actual yellow cake and what we want to do with it and what in the heck are we getting involved with selling it in the first place. That's the number one question. That's the national security question that President Trump is probably thinking, oh, my God, this is what's going on in the country. I just took this thing over, and I got to deal with this. So, yeah, and he's doing a good job. So now they have an investigation going on, finding out what really happened here.
Well, do they actually have an investigation going on?
Yeah, the House launched two different ones, I think.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah, hold on 5 seconds. We've got to celebrate capitalism here again.
Okay.
And not yellow cake and not any of the people on the list. They're all dead.
Don't forget to mention my trained cockroach, too.
And the pom-pommers.
And the referees at the game.
And the referees who are just wholly underpaid and standing and saluting the flag. Back in time, Bob.
Yes. Who's zooming who?
Who's zooming who? Exactly. That is the question.
And it's the Rosatom company, that's the Russian nuclear agency, that was doing business here, but they're also the ones who are running the Iranian facilities. Aha!
Aha!
So, Claire, what are you saying, Claire? Aha! Claire is right. There's all kinds of deals that were made, and they're saying monies were put into that foundation that the Clintons ran, and people have to take a look at what's going on here, and you know, a lot of people are just trying to get by, and these people are willing dealing with taxpayers' money, you know, and making these deals.
Well, with big-time national security, too.
And
I mean,
they want to clean this act up, you know. President Trump calls cleaning this act up, you know, draining the swamp, but, you know, it's pretty pervasive, and everybody has a lobbyist or, you know, somebody that's in there with a special interest that wants to do something. So this Rosatom, I think I'm saying it right. Forgive me, Russians, if I'm saying it wrong. Part of the Russian Nuclear Atomic Energy Agency. They're the ones that are also in Iran working on their, you know, supporting their efforts for their nuclear facilities. So, again, if in Iran they have outside their nuclear facilities, they're using the enriched uranium for making missiles. Watch out, Saudi Arabia. You know, watch out, Riyadh. You know, that's what Claire was talking about.
Right, right.
So we have a multiple complex, I call it holographic situational awareness problem that, you know, you need to pay a lot of attention to. And, you know, President Trump's been out there, you know, doing these things, and people just don't give him the proper and fitting recognition for the type of hard work this is.
Oh.
As he was talking on TV, and he was being interviewed, he says, I got in there, it doesn't be real hard. It's harder than I really thought. And it is. I mean, the pushback is tremendous because there's a lot of money in there with lobbyists and special interests trying to get control of the presidency and trying to move him around. And he's pushing back hard. Good thing he's a billionaire, you know.
Yeah.
We're lucky.
No
kidding.
Pocket. So the long and the short of it, do you think they actually, these players actually did anything illegal, or do they all do this kind of along the fringe of?
No, I don't think this is fringe stuff. I think there's a national security problem here. To be serious about it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know there's national security.
No, the national security problem means there's a violation.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah, because it's looking that way.
You can't screw around with this stuff.
No.
I'll get serious now. Yeah, I talk lightly about a lot of the things. When I get serious, I'm serious. And this is heavy duty, and it needs to be looked into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
do you think we have the
right... they want to do it, I'm not sitting there on these committees, but, you know, if there's a Trey Gowdy like that on these committees, you know, let him go out and go full bore and find out who these people are, what they did, and how they did it, to what extent. National security is, I would say, compromised at a certain level, and you can't have it compromised at any level.
Right, right. Do you think we have the right people
looking
into it?
That's my bottom line, talking straight and hard about it.
Right, but do you think we actually have the right people looking into it at this point, or do you think they're still kind of dancing
around the
issue?
Do you think there's an appetite to get to the bottom of this, or is this just we're going to talk about it?
That's the question. I mean, how many people have been involved in this? And, you know, who are they and to what extent are they going to allow this to happen?
Right.
With the amount that has come out now, do you think it's still able to be scuttled, or do you think it's a problem for them?
I don't know what you mean by that question.
All the Kerrys and the Clintons and the list, right?
Okay, sure.
Do you think these guys thought they were getting away with it? Now this is all coming out, and do you think enough has been exposed?
They have just as many people to protect them as they do to when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
So for every one of them, there's 100 people, you know, that relied on them. So they have a lot of people in there. The establishment people, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of people in the federal government.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, but...
Department of Energy, right? The Armed Services, you know, that's the Department of Defense. Claire's talking about the CIA, you know. We're talking about DHS. We want to get our people in DHS. So you're talking about a lot of people. How many people are in the State Department? There's close to 70,000 people there.
Are there really?
The flip side of that is with all those people involved, don't you think there's a pretty good chance that there's a significant number of them that are not going to be willing to go to jail for the higher-ups that kind of orchestrated all of this? And I think you know who I'm talking about. I think someone's going to crack.
There's a flip side, too. If you talk, then you don't exist anymore.
Well,
yeah, you go on the Clinton hit list.
Yeah. I don't mean it like that. I mean, they quiet you.
Too simple.
Yeah,
oh, you mean they just take away your pension? Oh, well, that's doable.
Yeah. I mean, there's the intersection of power and money is big. Now, we're talking about tens of billions of dollars here.
Right.
So a mid-level employee making, I don't know, $80,000 to $120,000 a year, they're like, they don't want to mess with my cockroach, but they're like a little cockroach that, you know, gets hit and they're gone. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't tell you about my cockroach, by the way. I took him out for a walk in our dog park. There were two pit bulls and two German shepherds. Pretty formidable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they looked at my cockroach wrong. I don't want to tell you the end of that story. It wasn't a good ending for them.
Bill just can't get over the fact that you say cockroach and I say cockroach, and Bill's been telling me for 20 years that's not how you say it.
La cucaracha.
I'm like, it's a cockroach. He just laughs every time. He just thinks that's so funny. He's all, it's a cockroach.
It's not a cockroach.
And here you are, Bruce, man after my own heart. He knows about cockroaches. I see it's because we grew up in the East. Bill never lived in the East. He lived out here on the West Coast. What do they know from nothing about cockroaches?
Yeah.
You go down to Florida, they're as big as, I don't know, they're like 6 by 8.
Along with everything.
One of each foot and travel.
Along with everything else there.
Mean ones down there? I thought I saw cockroaches up in Chicago and New York.
Yeah.
You know, I go to New York, they got some big roaches there. On the West Coast, you know, L.A., you know, you go down to Florida, no way, baby.
Yeah.
Those things are, you know, you can, it's like roller skating. Just put one on, wrap them around your feet, you're gone.
Oh, my gosh.
Back to the CFIUS process and Gechner, I mean, what was he doing and who did he talk to and who approved it? That's what you want to know. You know, that's the most important factor for these two committees in Congress to take this matter very seriously and find out why they would use their influence to have this kind of transaction going down. They call it a transaction. It's actually a deal with the Russian Nuclear Regulatory Agency, you know, and they got their company, Rosatom. There's like three of them, and they're also in, you know, four of our states. So, I mean, what are you saying and what are you doing and what's going on? I mean, how much is money influence going to do? And I don't buy it, you know. I don't think those two committees in the House would buy it either.
And why is this coming out 7 years after the fact? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, they're out of office, so they don't control the puppets.
So they were just able to keep it quiet for all that time, and now that all this stuff's being unearthed?
Yeah.
Do they actually know where this stuff ended up? I mean, the story I heard is it went to Europe, but they're not sure where it went from there. Are people trying to get enriched,
you know, what do you call it, yellow cake or enriched uranium? Turkey's out there, you know, they want to develop some nuclear capability. Aside from the Iranians and the North Koreans, and, you know, I think Turkey may, you know, at some point have to address that issue with us and what they want to do and how they want to do it, because nuclear capability and having a ballistic missile does not look good out there, you know, where they're at.
Well,
you know, they got various sundry things with the Iranians and the Syrians and, you know, throwing another missile in a mix doesn't look good at all. And
no.
If you look at what's going on with Assad, you know, he has some 5,000 or more missiles, and, you know, they always think about that being pointed towards Israel. So we have that consideration to make. That's why President Trump goes to Israel and Netanyahu. You know, we know him from the Likud from years ago with our team, and, you know, he's a strong, strong advocate, you know, protecting Israel. And there should be no ifs or ands or buts about that. And if it's making its way to Saudi Arabia from Iran, it's not that far from Israel.
Right.
You know?
Well,
that's
also
their goal.
Also,
know?
Isn't there a
destruction of, you know, the Satan is the United States, and the little Satan is, I don't know if you know they call him this, the Ayatollah. The United States is the big Satan, the little Satan is Israel. And they used to call Britain the little Satan too.
So is there, I imagine there is, but a threat of this stuff ending up in the wrong hands, and And, you know,
it's always been that way. But, I mean, it's always been that way. That's why we have our Navy SEAL Team 6 unit, our Special Activities Division. We have all kinds of people that are trained to go out there and get there. You know, they're around the world. They're positioned to go and stop it. But we have porous borders, you know, and God forbid that some of that comes across our borders and it gets into, you know, Southern California, Southern Texas.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking Arizona, like a dirty bomb.
Goes, you know, Phoenix or, you know, Houston. You know, Houston just had this terrific problem. But you don't know what's going to go down. And you don't know how these people are thinking and what's on their mind. This guy was gleefully talking about the jihad after you shot him twice in the stomach. That's how they think. Right. So, you know, it could be a cartel working with the jihad. MS-13 was said as early as 2005 to be working with the Al-Qaeda. You know, so, you know, I mean, what's to say they're not going to, you know, team up with ISIS and, you know, they're also working with the cartels. See what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
This goes beyond the scope of what most people talk about and what they want to hear and what they can listen to. It's a larger dimension of intersecting nefarious players that can work together. I mean, the group in Mali, the jihadists there were working with the cartels in South America. You know, they're getting their drugs there, you know. And the big drug cartel that's flowing from Afghanistan goes all through Europe. So you have, you know, not only the drugs, but you have the terrorists. And terrorists and drugs don't sound like it's a good mix to me, you know.
No, but they are logical allies, actually. We've got to one last quick celebration of capitalism here before the end of the hour. Then we'll come back
I want to talk about one more thing.
Right on. We'll come back with our guest, Bruce Moran, who needs to talk about one more thing. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I've been wondering why. Still, somehow, I believe we'd always survive. Now, I'm not so sure you're waiting to hear one good reason to try. But what more can I say? What's left to provide?
Question.
Yeah, heavy on the die.
Our new terrorism policy. All right, Bruce, on that cheerful note.
I would like to refer the audience to the notes that I sent to you. And there was a remark by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Yes.
And he said this. And I want you to think of this in relationship to what deal went down with the Russians and how he made a statement at the beginning of this year. He called the Russians the top enemy of the United States.
Sounds like Romney.
Okay. Yep. And he said, I asked my Republican colleagues to put country over party when it comes to Russia. So were those who were dealing with the Russian nuclear agency putting country over party,
mm-hmm.
or over special interests, over the, you know, greenback?
Yes.
That's the question.
So what's he know?
Yeah, that's why those two congressional committees are important in trying to make discovery on how all this transpired and what they want to do to make it whole. So nuclear energy is not just in terms of the fusion, but in terms of the weaponry, and it's not out there giving people the capabilities to weaponize the uranium. And that's how I end, you know, my point. Aside from my my pet cockroach is sitting here.
Except for that.
Yeah,
hey, but you know, you also have on here the Trading with the Enemy Act from 1917.
That's right, and it violates that. So you know that's something you got. if Chuck Schumer's saying they're our number one enemy and we're trading with the enemy, then it's violating the Trading with the Enemy Act. That's usually invoked during wartime, but you know we're more looking at Russia as, you know, nuclear capabilities. It could devastate the world as we can. So we're trying to, you know, take our nuclear capability and, you know, diminish that outcome. If you look at the clock, you know, the atomic scientist clock, it's down to 2.5 minutes. You know, so that's not a good sign. You know, it's not a sign where we're saying, you know, North Korea has, you know, started to work well with China to disarm. We're looking at them shooting, you know, missiles over Japan. We're looking at missiles going over, you know, Saudi Arabia. And they just, you know, those are the Sunnis and the Shiite. They have their own, you know, issues, and they got to deal with them themselves, you know. So, you know, if we're talking about the doctrine of Sharia law, who's following it, it doesn't appear that they're following it. If they're shooting a missile over it, you're not supposed to be attacking your fellow Muslims. That's what, you know, Claire knows all about those kind of things in more detail than I, but I'm abreast of it, and I know enough to stay out of trouble. So, you know, I'm trying to make some semblance of mind to the audience that this is very serious business, and those who've been in elected positions have not been carrying out their duty to the country, and it appears that the national security has been violated, and I, for the life of me, they have to be called on a rug for it.
Well, and it's not, like you say, it's not a small thing. This is like at the top of the chart serious when you're floating this stuff around the world. And,
exactly.
I mean,
know,
this is the big Russian
you
scandal.
You get it in the wrong hands, and you know, you're talking millions of people could die, or
yep.
areas like L.A. or some big metropolitan area could get contaminated forever. And they're not really treating this like the dangerous product that it is.
That's right.
Well, where does this fit in the whole, you know, we've got like 2 minutes left or a minute and a half, but, you know, the whole Russia scandal, I mean, this is a bigger Russia scandal than anything that they're alleging.
Yeah, that would be the other side of the coin. You say something that somebody else is doing it, that would be a great Trotsky ploy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what Trotsky was,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they used. You create a problem, say the other person did it, and you solve it. So they're saying the Russians were involved. The Russians, the Chinese, are always involved in espionage work. We know that. That's a matter of, you know, you just play live and let die. You know, that, and the British know that. I mean, that's what we all do. But to the degree and to the extent of manipulating the election, and to say that when we would never have guessed that President Trump would be president, you know, 4 months out, 5 months out. He was nowhere to be seen up until, you know, the convention. It looked like, you know, what was going on, you know?
Right.
You had Jeb Bush out there, you know, Lindsey Graham. You had Governor Perry. You had all these, you know, Ben Carson. You would never think that President Trump, you know, had a shot. I thought so, but if you're given the odds of him winning with Hillary Clinton's, you know, popularity, and the amount that the Democratic Party put forth to get her elected.
Yeah.
Inside line.
And then we keep finding out more about that. We
won't talk about her.
Well, in light of everything that's going on now, I think we got the right guy in there to really shake it up and expose these people for what they've done and what they continue to do, and hopefully we can get this wrapped up.
We're out of here because the news is cutting us off. But
thank you so very much. God bless America. God bless everybody out there.
Thank you, Bruce.
Take care of your families and see you at the ball game.
Yeah, hey, we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, I'll see you with the referees. I'm bringing my cockroach just in case something goes down.
The pom-pom girls are on.
In case there's some bad dogs there.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to find all that you need to know about the show, archives, and all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll have the archive up shortly.
And you're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.